You're listening to Ham Radio on KAXE,
Cooking with Amy Thielen.
I remember everything, every song you sang to me, making coffee every morning. Doesn't matter where I go, another day, another show. Nowhere else feels like home. It's alright, you know how I like it. It's just fine.
Why did you call it Ham Radio, Amy? What's the deal?
Well, you know, I wanted to have the word radio in the title because it's primarily our primary audience, right, is right here.
Sure.
Bemidji, Grand Rapids, and everybody knows it's radio, but we're also streaming it, so I wanted the fact that we're doing it live to be in there, and then also it has to, a word that has to say food and be appetizing and preferably sound like Midwestern food.
Sure.
And so,
do you know, so you're not like, you love ham? Is that the thing?
Oh, well, I do love ham. You know,
and
it.
And we're a couple of hams making this radio show and podcast. So here we go.
There's that too.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be talking with you tonight. We're broadcasting from downtown Bemidji. Let's talk a little bit about the theme of tonight's ham radio.
Well, we're going with more time than money. And we're going to be talking about thrift, resourcefulness, creativity, the creativity that comes from having to be resourceful. And we'll be exploring recipes, like incredible recipes, in many cases old-fashioned or coming from a time when there really wasn't much for, you know, fresh vegetables or things like that. Recipes that are incredible and they require a knack and some know-how. And we'll be talking to my friends Bruce Engebretson.
And he's from around these parts, isn't he?
Yes,
with a name like that.
He's really well known, actually, because he is such an incredible person. But he's known to be a really incredible baker and an incredible weaver, hand weaver. That's like his vocation. Okay. He's also an EMT. Mm. And then we're talking to my friend Ted Lee, our friend,
yeah,
out of Brooklyn. Who writes about Southern food and is a cookbook author and a writer, and he knows a lot about recipes and old recipes as well.
I love this about how there is like story in the food we make and taking time. I feel like you like dug into my innermost problems, because that is exactly when I don't cook very well. I don't take time. I go too fast. So this has been a great reminder for me to like just take a little time with this.
Maybe you don't have time though.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, yeah, I just need to figure that out. And so we're going to talk about that, when people did spend more time making food for each other, and when you do have the time, like when you have people over, and those incredible church cookbooks.
I know. And I think that, you know, the pandemic really, a lot of people were at home,
mm-hmm.
and so you could put a pot of beans on from the dried state, or you could let some dough to rise. People were making bread. So time is just like one ingredient mm-hmm. in a recipe, and I think that's what we're exploring today.
All right, so we'll be talking with Bruce. Also, keep listening, because we will be delivering the community recipe. This is going to be a lot of fun. We'll tell you more about it after we talk to our friend Bruce Engebretson. You're listening to Ham Radio.
I had good teachers everywhere in my life. I've been really lucky. My mom was a good cook and baker, and she learned from her mother, who I learned from too, because I lived with. So I had older aunts and uncles, and mm-hmm. you know. So I said, "Well, Grandma, how did you know how to cook?" Or what? She said, "Well, there was almost nothing to cook." So those Nordic people lived on milk cooked into a pudding without sugar, called, you know, grut or whatever you call it, different things.
Grut is porridge.
Yeah, it's like a porridge, but they ate that. So, you know, they say that the food, the first thing you get rid of when you come to this country is your clothes. In general.
I mean, you really shed their clothes?
Yeah, they had. They said at Ellis Island, there were whole rooms full of, well, they'd meet, you know, they would, well, they'd meet there. They didn't want to look like they were from a peasant village in the mountains. Right. And then the next thing is your language. The last thing to go is the food.
Right. So in other words, it's the thing that lasts the longest.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
What are some of the family recipes that you still make?
Oh my gosh, creme, rhubarb creme. That's
what's that?
Rhubarb sauce. It's simple, but it's delicious. I mean, it's
cream.
No, creme.
Okay.
Creme. I don't always say it. I don't know.
Yeah. No.
It's between the Swedes and the Norwegians and my own.
What do you put it on?
Well, you just, everything. You eat it just like that. It's a pudding. Well, yeah, it's any kind of berries or rhubarb that's cooked with a little thickening, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sweeten it yourself with sugar and put some cream, the half and half will curdle, but you know, with rhubarb sauce.
You pour liquid cream on top?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, with cinnamon, and put the sugar on yourself or add a little when you cook it.
I'm going to try this because we always have too many raspberries.
We didn't know you had too many raspberries, Heidi.
We'll broadcast right from the raspberry patch sometime. How's that?
Yeah, let's.
You get me into raspberries. Make rasp bubble. It's a fizzy drink. I think the recipe, better Google it. Quart jar, put in a cup of raspberries, a quarter cup of sugar, and fill it up with water. And there's yeast, and then seal it tight.
Oh, it's
wonderful. And then you let it go until the top is starting to, you know, it's bubbly.
Yeah.
Then put it in the fridge, and ooh, that's good.
Bubbly, but not moldy. So I've made a version of this, and it's fabulous. The first time that I met you, Bruce, or the second time, you invited us to your Santa Lucia party. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Santa Lucia, yeah.
Which is an annual party you and Bud usually do in December.
Yep. It's not Christmas. It's, you know, the Swedes, it's before Christmas. And I kind of did it to honor my mother and grandmother and aunties and all those old family recipes, kind of sweet and savory recipes.
Yeah.
I don't do them. I don't make rye bread, limpa rye bread or bulgur or bula or rice pudding or fruit soup. I don't.
Not every day.
Do that. No.
But I walked into your place and I was like, wow, food is everywhere. It looks glorious. There's mincemeat pie, homemade mincemeat that you and Bud make, just wonderful stuff. There was wild strawberry jam that you make from gathered wild strawberries, which is kind of crazy because they're really hard to find and they're very tiny.
Yeah, but if you find a patch, you know, say what you will about clear cutting, it makes for wild strawberries. You know, my auntie said, I used to always try and pick 20 quarts of them. I'm like, wow.
Wow.
But there was more time. You know, we're talking about time. Mm-hmm. And there was more time. And she'd pick them for her older aunties.
Yeah, we are talking about time. I mean, also, the thing I remember very clearly, and I think this kind of really is a great image for you, is that, you know, there was this beautiful hand-woven cloth, and it probably was 3 feet square, and it was a gorgeous pattern, colors, very tight, very beautifully woven. Then you told me that you had woven that, and I pulled it back, and underneath was just a hill of bread.
Overdone.
And
overdid
buns.
It.
Wow.
It was gorgeous. You didn't overdo anything. It was beautiful, and everything was, like, beautifully made, and you have a wood-fired cook stove, bake stove outside as well. That just burnishes the tops of those buns. It's just everything that comes out of your kitchen is really beautiful.
Well, thank you. Well, everything that you get to see. So, but yeah, but thank you.
Tell me about some of these Scandinavian flatbreads. I didn't know that there was like an entire world and universe of different kinds of flatbreads, that there were bran crisp breads. And these are like basically, when you say flatbread, you mean kind of like a cracker? Does it always mean a cracker?
No, flatbreads amongst the Finns, they'll mean a flat, like leipä, which is a flat yeast bread that's
thinner. It's more like a bread.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. That's. But to the Swedes and Norwegians, a flatbread was a cracker.
But tell me about your Aunt Sarah. You said your Aunt Sarah always made the bran crackers. And that's the recipe of the week that we're sharing this week.
Sarah.
The community recipe. So everybody who got inspired by that, or maybe have their own recipe, their own favorite crisp bread or cracker or Scandinavian crisp bread, free to make that. And we'll be talking about it in a little bit.
Yes, Sarah. God bless Sarah. She was one of the older auntie of my dad's. I've got an old cookbook of hers, and it has actually gammelost in it. Like that's
what is that?
Gammelost is like Limburger cheese. You know, I have some of her diaries. In the winter, she was making flatbread and lefse a couple times a week. I wonder if she sold some of it or gave some away, traded it for the cream or the eggs or something. Just she was a very generous person, and she helped us a lot. And she made this flatbread is her recipe from with bran. And,
it's fabulous. It's one of my favorite.
It's very good. And you can make that things. With other things in it. Like I make it with oat bran too, but it's harder to roll out with oat bran.
Right. So kind of walk people through how you make this.
Yeah. Water and buttermilk. And you know, we used to have sour milk be the same, but that's different. You can't use this pasteurized milk. It doesn't sour right. Don't do that. If you see that in the recipe, don't use pasteurized soured milk. It's not good. You
know, like that's just called rotten milk.
That's right. The recipe is in your book.
It's in Company. Yeah, Company. You lent it to me for this my latest cookbook, Company.
Well, so it's water and some fat. I use butter often because butter or lard and or a mixture and some hot water to melt it. And then you add the buttermilk. There's white flour and bran, wheat bran in it. Mm-hmm. And you sift that together. And then with the soda, baking soda in it and salt. And the sugar, there's some sugar in it. And then you mix that together and make it so it's not too stiff a dough and need it just a little bit to incorporate it. I let it chill overnight and then make it into small balls. Oh, you would start out, you know, the size of a bigger than a golf ball, but you know, you want to make it the right size. I bake it in the oven.
But you roll it out with a special pin?
Well, you don't have to have that. It does roll out easier because those little knobs are forcing the stuff because those grooves force it.
So it kind of waffles it.
Yeah, you could use
it. I guess it dries easier than in the oven too. If you're going for like a crisp kind of dehydrated thing, then that would be a lot easier.
I think so. And we always had one. So
it was normal.
Yeah. It was just unquestioned.
Yeah.
Unexamined. So anyway, but be careful baking them. You have to watch them real closely. I usually set the timer and I can bake two at a time because I don't like wasting the oven, you know, or the time. Put one in on the top and set the timer for 4 minutes and then put one on the bottom and set it for another 4 minutes. You know, I keep rotating.
Kind of a routine.
Yeah, well, one from the top to the bottom and then they bake more evenly and you can bake two in the oven at a time on pizza pans.
But what I love is they last. Once they're baked and they're cooled, they last for how long? A really long time, it seems.
If you want to cut them in quarters, like fartles or... Then do that first on the pizza pan before you bake them.
Okay, good to know.
Sometimes people also had them in squares, like the size of a deck of cards. You could cut that before you.
That'd be cute, too, like little crackers.
Can we go? I'm confused. You said about the size, and you said bigger than a golf ball?
Start rolling them out to see how thick you're going to get
them. Not like we're putting something on a cookie sheet, like a cookie.
Yeah, no. I'm saying the size of the ball of dough before you roll it out. Gotcha.
So you have like a big lump of dough and then you divide it into...
Yeah, make it into a long roll.
So many different pieces that are all the same size.
That's what I need to know. Good.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, too, like how these things stick around. Like how do these recipes persist? Because we're talking about a recipe like this or the strudel obviously would take a lot of time. A lot of the things that you and I get into as are in our cook friendship are things that take actual time in the kitchen, whether they sit overnight or like the one time you brought all that raw milk, remember? And you made it into curds and whey. And then you set the whey in the pan on the top of my wood cook stove all day as we were making the strudel, I think. And you made a kind of a cheese.
Made primos.
Primost, which is like a, do you know, Heidi, those cooked whey cheeses in the Norwegian? The one we see in the stores would be like the Jetost, I think you say. It's a brown, kind of like a dulce de leche.
Yeah.
The Primost.
Well, that we used to be able to buy that at the store. It was called Northern Lights Primost.
Really?
And it tastes a little bit like that brown goat cheese Jetost. They might make it the same way. Anyway, you cook whey down. My mom would grate it with a grater into a pan and add a little cream and a little bit of brown sugar. And then we'd spread it on rye bread. And it was really good.
That's what's so important, I think, is to stand by somebody while they're cooking. To absorb what they're doing. Like I absorb the way you move when you do that. And it just kind of gets into you in a good way. Well, this has been great. I really don't. I mean, I feel like I could talk to you forever. And I do. I get to. How lucky am I? Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And what did we say? It's in your hands. It's touch.
Touch.
Touch is where it's at.
Yeah, you brought me right back to my grandma's kitchen. That's great. Can Bruce be my new best friend?
No, he's mine. You know what? Sometimes I come in for lunch and there's a bag, like a paper bag, and it's full of that brand crisp bread.
Oh my gosh.
Just sitting on my counter. Or sometimes I come home from town and you know, Bruce or Bud, kind of angels, they've been there and they're dropping things off. They're very thoughtful people, and you really have to have gifts at the ready. It's like coming into KAXE.
You're always getting something. Swiss chard or some syrup, who knows?
Dahlia bulbs.
That's right. Let's talk about the community recipe, though, because you mentioned it as we talked to Bruce, and it is available for people. It comes from your book company, your cookbook, thanks to, and it's Bruce's recipe.
Yes.
You can find it at KEXE.org. Look for Ham Radio. You can also see it in the show notes of the podcast, but let's talk about it a little bit.
Yes. So when I was writing and putting together Company, my latest cookbook, I asked Bruce if he would lend that recipe to the book. And I tested it and it just works perfectly, just basically as written. And I love this crisp bread because it does, it lasts forever. It has a natural sweetness that doesn't come from sugar, but just comes from the bran. They're just unusual. It's a kind of an easy homemade cracker to have around. They're just delicious. I did some book promo events and tour, and that was one of the things that, you know, I would ask people to make if they said, well, what can I make? And everybody fell in love with this recipe.
Yeah. So we want folks to make it, or something, if you have a tradition in your family that's kind of like this, as he was talking about a lot of different Scandinavians make different kinds of flatbread or crisp sort of things.
There's so many.
Yeah,
it's really, and you know, the part where he was talking about, he knows a lot about some of these Finnish traditions where they would bake maybe, I don't know, a few times a year, and then you'd make like these big round kinds of breads that would be stacked on a huge dowel next to the stove and they would dry out. And that's when he was saying, I was like, how do you eat that? And he goes, well, you just take a wood planer and you plane off sheets of it. I'm like, oh, sounds delicious. But, you know, it probably is really delicious.
Right.
When you soak it in this like rich raw milk and, you know,
right.
Yum.
And this is all going back to, you know, these recipes don't have like crazy ingredients you can't find somewhere. They don't cost that much. But if you put the time in, it's going to be great. We hope. We want to hear from you. You can text us photos. Let us know how it goes. We'll be talking about it next week. You can text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up later, we'll open up our phone line. So if you make something like that, you can certainly call in and talk with us on Ham Radio.
Yeah, we want to hear, let's flesh out some of these flatbread and crisp bread recipes in the neighborhood, because there are a lot of, you know, old family recipes that people make for certain holidays maybe, and you can make them year round. You can make all these things.
Company has a beautiful photo. What do you have on it in there? I'm trying to remember. Do you remember?
Of Bruce.
Of the flatbread, and you have something on it. You had.
Yeah. So there's, you know, Bruce's brand, we're calling it brand crisp bread. And I made an appetizer from it. So I have this huge round, right? Like maybe like, I don't know, 14 inch diameter. And then I just took the butt end of a wooden spoon and just kind of broke it and cracked it.
Oh, okay.
Into like puzzle pieces. And then I laid really good sardines, like not bad sardines, but like those glistening, delicious sardines. Do you like sardines? I don't know. Your face is like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I have a feeling I actually would. I think it's one of those that I always thought I didn't like, but I bet I would like if they're good.
Yeah, and they're not fishy. They're good. Mm-hmm. And then you lay a little bit, like just one, you know, fillet of that, and then you top it with a very thin slice of lardo, which is cured pork fat. Can't go wrong.
Did you make lardo? Is that available? I don't understand lardo.
Oh, well, I have made lardo. But, okay. Yeah.
You can buy lardo, though.
You can buy it.
Okay.
Yes.
Huh.
Anyway,
learning so much. Oh my gosh. We're excited to, we've got another conversation coming up. Tell us a little bit about this friend of yours that we got to meet.
Ted Lee is a writer and a cookbook author, and he and his brother are the author of the Lee Brothers Southern Table. So they're kind of a duo. They write as a duo. And when I first moved to New York, I got to know Ted and his wife Evie because I was a cook at the time, not writing or anything, but kind of writing adjacent, you know. Mm-hmm. And his wife Evie is a sculptor. My husband's a sculptor. So we're like couple friends. We're very, you know, old couple friends. And also, though, Ted and his brother, some of those, you know, their first book, when I was really thinking and kind of thinking about the new Midwestern table when it was incubating in me, I really looked to the way that they did that. So one of the things that was so impressive is that they did a lot of like really interesting research. They went out into the country, they found people, they listened, they followed a trail from person to person, would spend time in people's kitchens, watch, observe, listen, take notes, get their stories, and really learn about Southern cooking. So, yeah, it's always a joy to talk to Ted. He can speak to a lot of different things on a lot of different topics. So, Well, we were just talking about things that take time and skill rather than money, per se.
Right.
So recipes that maybe have been lost to time because of, you know, there's so much less time in our modern world. You know, preserving them takes doing them and keeping them alive. And I just think about you and who you are as a cookbook author and a chef and a journalist, really. And even before I knew you very well, I was just always super impressed with like how much time it was very obvious that you would go deep into the field. And this is you and your brother, right? And as the Lee brothers.
Right. It was always, for some reason, it was always me and my brother because we were always messing around in the kitchen as teenagers. It was always seemed like a collaborative project, whatever it was.
Yeah. But you guys would go deep into the field and talk to people and get their get their recipes, get things that were unusual and very cool.
Right. Well, one of the things we knew when we were first starting out as food journalists, you know, we were in our 20s. We didn't really have the authority of most other journalists out there. And we're thinking like, what is an angle? Like, where can we find that authority if we don't have it ourselves?
And just to be clear, just to kind of give people your story, like you were born in New York, and then you spent most of your childhood in Charleston, South Carolina, and that's where you learned to cooking and absorbing Southern food and culture.
Yeah, well, I mean, we really started out as dad's prep cooks. Said my mom had a job where she was actually commuting to New York, so she'd leave on Monday morning on the Piedmont flight through Atlanta, and then come back on Friday afternoon, and my dad did cook, but he had a full-time job. And so he would come home from the hospital at 7. And so we would help with the shopping and we also would help with the prep. He would call and say, you know, get a pot of rice on the stove. And we did plenty of stovers. Like, don't get me wrong, there was lots of frozen meals, but that idea of becoming part of the food economy of the family came about from an early age. And also the shopping piece of it, like when you're a kid and you're shopping for ingredients and your dad tells you to get a pound of shrimp and you go to the fish counter and say, I need a pound of shrimp. And they say, well, do you want it peeled or deveined? Do you want it whole, you know, head on with, like all those kinds of things, that sort of fear and embarrassment you get out when you're a teenager. And then when you become an adult, it's like, there's a lot of knowledge that you didn't really know that you had. To go back to the sort of being young food journalists, our thing was to go to parts of the South that hadn't been covered by the food magazine. We wanted to report on home cooking traditions mostly. Like that was where we were gonna get the authority, was to actually get into people's houses and see how they cook and really sort of absorb the recipes that way. And I think Matt had the idea just from being an historian, he has a degree in history. He was like, let's reach out to like the state folklorists and see whether they know people in these communities that we're heading to. And they were just like, oh yeah, Mrs. Miracle, she makes a dried apple pie like you've never had. And, you know, and we were like, wait, dried apple pie, what even is that? As soon as you tap into someone who knows folk traditions from a very kitchen perspective, the world opens up to you. And that was the way we were able to report our first stories in Eastern Kentucky, in Northern Florida. Speaking of preservation in the context of all that and thrift, the dried apple pie we had in Eastern Tennessee, I'd never heard of that preparation where you take dried apples, usually from your property, so you can hold them virtually indefinitely.
Like, are they, the dried apples, are they still pliable?
They were sort of like diced, you know, they were seeded and diced and peeled, and they were kind of like hard as rocks. They were probably cut at a 1-inch dice. They'd shrunken like into this hard, gnarly thing. And if you put them on your tongue, it would take a long time for that thing to rehydrate. But the flavor, it would talk about time consuming. You're dehydrating the apples to begin with, and then you're rehydrating them when it's out of season. Tense, intense flavored pie.
You're thinking at minimum 6 months ahead and generally a year.
Right. So you're thinking about how happy you're going to be in March eating that pie that you put away those apples in October, November.
I know, like part of the recipe where you list like how long it takes, you'd say 1 year.
Right. Right. Exactly. Time, 1 year, yield, 8 slices. You know,
2 hours plus 1 year.
But that was one that where I think about that combination of thrift and patience and sort of intricacy.
I don't necessarily mean intricate. What we were talking about with Bruce just a little bit ago was about touch and how watching somebody, being in the same room with somebody as they're cooking something and they are teaching it to you.
Nothing compares, right, Amy, to that watching someone do what they do without interrupting them and just sort of thinking about what that looks like. Because that's what we do when we write recipes, right? We're trying to replicate what is the process in sensual terms. You know, what does this look like? What does this smell like? What does this sound like at every point in the recipe so that we can really build a world around a recipe? Like, what is the world of the recipe like? That's why I love working in your kitchen, Amy, because I learn so much about processes that might be that. I mean, you write extraordinary recipes. You're the recipe writer, I think, you know.
Stop.
As American recipe writers go, you're tops. These other shades of things. And there's the equipment. Remember, Amy, when we were working in your kitchen last summer and I saw that juicer that you have that's so extraordinary? I finally found one. It's not in as good condition as yours. Need a little finessing, but
it's a big cast iron juicer that my mom got at a garage sale. And she gifted to me 25 years ago. Yeah. It is beautiful.
The other thing about it is it has this low center of gravity. It has this really spiky and so intricately perforated dome where you press the juice, but it also has that lever is like a foot long, so it really doesn't take a lot of pressure.
You know that's interesting, like, where this conversation goes, because I'm thinking about the tools that make the tools that are different from today's tools that make a recipe that is maybe on the edge of extinction or at the risk of dying out because people don't have the time or the skill or just the taste for it anymore. But what about all those tools that you have to have to make that? And I think, you know, Bruce has so many of those things. Like, what are some of your favorite?
Because that's an example to me. I mean, it's an antique juicer. It seems like it's from the 30s or 40s. But it's also clear it comes from a time of thrift, because it actually expresses so much more juice than I'm used to, really. I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's almost doing me a disservice to use it in recipe testing, because I can get 2.5 tablespoons of juice out of half a lemon. It's almost not accurate, right? Because you have to be using two tools that everyone's using. But to your point, those, what I always say is I like Converse high tops of kitchen tools. Mm-hmm. I like the tools that are durable, everlasting, classic skillets, a ton of cast iron. I have enameled cast iron, Dutch ovens. And I also love a good restaurant supply store.
Oh, you know, do. You're always sending me these Webster-on links. And there's good stuff
there. I
like the
hardware that maybe is not as ergonomic, but it's going to last forever.
Yeah, what do you buy at the restaurant supply store, Ted?
I use a lot of those quarter sheet pans and the racks. Mm-hmm. Like, those are classic, like, commercial stuff, like a quarter sheet. That's where I got my first bartender's friend juicer, you know, the big honkin' juicer. I actually like the skillets there. Those, like, restaurant supply skillets with the big sort of, like, long handle.
With the rubber handles?
And the couple rivets. Yeah. Just.
And you can kind of flip easier? Or?
Yeah, they just have a great weight to them, I think. You know, they have that nice curve. They're great for omelets is what
True.
I use them for.
Yeah. These things are affordable, and you can buy a lot of them. And
well, that's the other thing that appeals about a restaurant supply store. And we're not even talking about the restaurant supply auctions, like the liquidation auctions. I have a whole separate thing on that. Crazy stuff for really cheap.
You're listening to Ham Radio on KAXE.
Are there any recipes that, for you, you're thinking about in the last year or two that really, really need to be saved?
Community cookbooks that I think of community cookbooks a lot because I get a lot of inspiration from them. And I feel like people like me and my brother, you know, in getting a lot of inspiration from them, we tend to take them to a new place. For example, we, in our Simple Fresh Southern book, we have a shrimp and deviled egg salad roll. And it's basically like, think of a Southern version of a lobster roll. We call it deviled egg salad, but you don't make deviled eggs. You basically make a spicy egg salad. You fold chopped cooked shrimp into it, and it's delicious, right? But that came from a community cookbook from Tennessee, whose name is escaping me now, but it was the original recipe that we got the marriage of shrimp and deviled eggs for was a shrimp and deviled egg casserole.
Cool.
And it involved making deviled eggs, like piping, you know, 24 deviled eggs, piping that. I mean, that's already like an hour's worth of work. And then you put them in a 9x13. And then you made this shrimp gravy with canned shrimp and milk and a roux and that sort of thing, like more process. Pour that over those deviled eggs, put it in an oven. You bake it for like 45 minutes to an hour. I think there were some eggs mixed in too to make it firm up.
Oh, into the custard of the shrimps.
Yeah. You serve it over canned Chinese noodles that have crisped in a slow oven.
Wow.
I was like, that sounds like truly Baroque, like one of those mid-century things where you're sort of like, I don't know whether that sounds delicious or sounds gross, but I would love to like go back and find that family who contributed that recipe and see how they actually made that dish. Because, you know, I know there were some steps left out, first of all, because that's the challenge of community cookbooks is there's usually you draw recipes from cooks in the community, but they're not necessarily edited by the same consciousness so that they're all sort of in a similar format. So you sort of get what you get, right? And that's the joy and the sort of disappointment of them. They don't always work out. You know, there's sort of that cook till doneness. There's so much unsaid in general, when home cooks like give over their recipes. In the South, there's always this myth that when someone gives you their recipe, they're always leaving something out. I think people, when they give of themselves, they give generously. Maybe.
I agree with you. And I think that's something that people kind of used to say, kind of as a tease. Like,
right.
So you didn't really know if the recipe was going to be accurate or not. It was kind of just something you said, like, oh, I actually leave something out or I leave something out. But I think it's interesting, though, that recipes are really in those community books, as much as they're like kind of weirdly because they're so short, they're kind of evocative, but there's a lot left out of the narrative and the method as to how to make it. And so it is kind of hit or miss in a sense that some of these recipes were better made by somebody's side.
Right. There is this value in community cookbooks. I do wish we were sort of repairing that knowledge, you know. And I also think there is this sort of level of specificity and detail that's probably maybe not being carried forward. It's funny, where I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, the junior league cookbook from Charleston. It's called Charleston Receipts.
And Receipts for Recipe.
Low country word for recipe, funny. Charleston Receipts. It's been around for 75 years now. It's the 75th anniversary of it. And it's extraordinary. And people still cook from it. It's amazing.
Ted, thank you. We're going to talk to you again. So this is to be continued.
Great. I will be happy to be back, Amy. Just call on me anytime.
I will.
What a guy, your friend Ted Lee, huh?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, I'm still laughing about a recipe that takes 2 hours and 1 year.
Yes.
But I'm thinking also about my new garden. Mm-hmm. Your garden.
Yeah, you planted last night, actually. We hadn't till now, so.
Right, and so I'm already thinking, like, I really have a lot of things in the fall. That's what it's about, like, in the fall. You know, you dry things. Like, I really want to try these dried apples. Those sound like little flavor bombs. Really cool. But there's so much that you have to do in the fall. It's such a busy time. But if you do that preparatory work of canning, that's another show.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, canning, drying, freezing, all of that, then your, you know, seasonal harvest is a lot cheaper. I mean, you save a lot of money.
Yeah, because we're talking about time, but we're also talking about thrift, and you know, things are pretty expensive nowadays.
Yes, I pay really deep attention, and always have, not just now. I find that when I go to the grocery store, and a lot of times I'll ask the checkout person, mm-hmm. like, "What's high this week? What do you think is so expensive, or what's gone down?" Because you know, prices fluctuate so much, like butter. Milk, mostly butter is crazy. Eggs, of course, we know. And, you know, like, they'll say something surprising, like, it's crazy, bleach tripled, you know, and this is the kind of stuff that I get very excited about, because my real dream is to be on The Price is Right.
Oh, what? I've not heard this.
Yes, yes.
You want to guess the price.
Yeah, I love it. So, oh my gosh. In the summers when I was a kid, Price is Right came on at 10:30, and that's when I would get up. In time to watch it when I was before I had a job, and yeah, I love it.
Wow. We are talking about recipes and cooking and being next to people and kind of absorbing how they cook and thrift. We're going to be opening up our phone lines. You can text us right now if you'd like, 218-326-1234. Again, he's talking about those community cookbooks.
Yeah.
We just heard from Kari. She says, what a great conversation. Two of my favorite recipes are wheat molasses bread and monster cookie, and they are from an old church community cookbook. And then she's also asking, what about supermarket sweeps? Is that a show? That's another show?
Yeah. I don't really watch that.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Do you still watch? Is Price is Right still on? Different, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. They've had a new host for a long time, but. Okay. Yeah. Good. No, the thing about community cookbooks, I think that's also cool, is that, as you know, in a small town, people become kind of famous for things in a small town. And yeah, they can really get a lot of notoriety out of a really good cookie recipe.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear about this monster cookie recipe that Kari makes. Coming up, we're going to be, well, last week we met Francesca. We learned the ins and outs of acorn flour and pancakes. And her little brother had a lot to say about some stuff that he knows about. So we'll be hearing from Luca. That's coming up. And then get ready. We want you to join us. The number is 218-326-1234. And you can text or call that number.
Hi, you're on Ham Radio. Who am I speaking to?
Luca McBroom Squadroni.
Hi, Luca. What do you want to talk about today?
Spruce tips.
Oh, cool. So as I understand it, the spruce tips are like, it's the new growth at the end. Do you know the differences between all the different trees? Like, how do you know it's a spruce tip and instead of like a balsam tip?
Because the needles are round on the branch. So then that means there's a spruce tip on it.
So what do you do with all these spruce tips?
Americans use them for colds and cough.
Oh, so it's kind of like a medicine. How do you get the medicine out of them, though?
You eat them.
Oh, you just eat them?
Yeah. You can make them into jam, and you can pickle them.
Oh, so what's your favorite way to eat them?
Plain, no pickled. So how I know of this, because my whole family go to the Lost 40s.
Oh, the Lost 40, that's so cool. Are you eating one of those right now?
Yeah.
You're eating a spruce tip right now? What does it taste like?
The last taste is bitter.
But what's the first taste?
Tart.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I hope you find lots this year. Now, when I go outside, I'm going to be seeing them everywhere. I see a spruce tree, I'll be looking for tips. Thanks, Luca.
Wait, one more thing.
Oh, okay.
Be careful, though, for the fir trees. Those ones are poisonous, so if you got them mistaken, it's not a good thing.
Okay, I'm really glad you told me that. It's good to know. So there's, like, a lot of amazing things in the woods and a little bit of peril once in a while. You guys know so much. I'm really, really thankful and grateful that you're willing to share all this knowledge.
Bye.
Hopefully we can meet. Bye.
I will tell you that after that conversation, I've been eating spruce tips, or trying them at least. And he's not wrong on the tasting.
You know what I did too.
What'd you think?
So I was on a walk last week and I was like, oh, thinking about Luca. And he's correct. I mean, he's a real purist. I think it would need a little pickling or something.
It was so fun because, of course, our conversation with him, it was via Zoom. So you could see him that he was eating as he was talking to you. Oh, my gosh. Maybe you have something like that, you know, that doesn't cost you anything. You just grab the spruce tips. And I bet people make things like beer with it.
Flavor. For sure.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's just been very trendy, like the new Nordic chef trend. Mm-hmm. Spruce tips are made into vinegar, different kinds of syrup. Like, the way I see it a lot is spruce tips in simple syrup, simmered, and then, you know, so that simple syrup takes on that scent and aroma and flavor, and then you use it maybe in drinks.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not having that, of course.
No, I mean, NA drink, you know, just with sparkling water.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Our phone lines are open right now, 218-326-1234. If we have brought something to your mind, we'd love to hear from you. This is Ham Radio, Cooking with Amy Thielen. We've got a couple of texts. So Luca's mom's sent me something here.
Mm-hmm.
She said she wishes she could be calling in tonight, but she's at a graduation party. And she said, shoot, because this is my show. I have no business making my own jelly, tomato sauce, rhubarb sauce, muffins, bread, yogurt, granola when there's a giant mess in one part of my house at any one time. But I do it anyway.
Oh, I like these squadronis.
Uh-huh. Yep. A lot of fun.
Yeah. And we heard from Jen as well.
Oh, yeah.
Who was talking about her grandma's noodle recipe.
Yeah.
And this really spoke to me because my grandma also had a noodle recipe that she just memorized, and we all memorized, and it was just, you know, one cup of flour, one egg, and then half of an eggshell of water. And this sounds like, like a noodle that you roll out. So, Jen says, and fabulously vague instructions like, quote, enough flour to make a very stiff dough and let it dry for a while until it feels like a chamois.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a flannel chamois.
Hey, we've got a couple of calls coming in here. Hi, you're on Ham Radio. Oh, hi, you're on Ham Radio.
Oh, hi, this is John. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
Hi. I love your cookbooks, and I've been reading them and cooking from them for years. And I'm going back to Minnesota this summer and to see my mm-hmm. family. And I have a sushi question for you.
Okay.
Why is it we never eat freshwater sushi? I think I want a crappy, hand roll or, you know, walleye sashimi, why don't we do freshwater sushi?
Yeah, I have wanted to know this as well. But you know what? You know what? The Minnesota sushi is, though? You ever had that?
Oh, the pickles and ham and cream cheese?
That was my big joke. Yes, yes.
Wow, heaven on earth right there. That's the best.
You perfect for ham radio. There we go.
Yeah, got to bring the ham in. Okay, so I, you know, I have thought about this. Like, why can't we just eat our, you know, lake fish, which is so spanking fresh when you catch it? Why can't we just, like, sashimi that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know, the DNR, I've looked this up. The DNR is like really against it, you know? They think that, I don't know, it might have something, or it's, you know, mercury, or I don't really know. I think that it might be worth just trying and see if I survive or something.
testing some science experiments on ourselves. I'm into it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be good though? Like in Japan, they do a lot of freshwater fish. They do some, and they do like the fluke, right? That's like white fish, like a white fish cut very thinly, and it's just kind of translucent. So do you do a lot of fishing?
Right. I have done, you know, some ocean fishing and caught some, you know, caught bluefin and yellowtail, and have done sashimi and, you know, some sushi rolls and stuff with that, which is great. And then, you know, love always lake fishing every time I come back to Minnesota, but, you know, it's pretty typical, you know, simple fry recipes or whatever, for freshwater fish.
Yeah. So you make sushi at home though?
I have. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's goodish. Fine. It's fine. Yeah. Not as good as, going out, but it turns out okay.
Well, I think this is a plan. I think that, I don't know, one of us should just, you know, try it.
Sounds great. Well, keep up the good work, and I'll call back if I try freshwater sushi this summer.
Yeah, let us know.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hi, you're on Ham Radio.
Hi, me?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi, Amy and Heidi. It's Julie Crabb, and I...
hi, Julie.
So, hi, Amy. Really lovely to hear you. It's a great show. So, my granddaughter, whose mother is a forager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, she made some homemade buns, and then she made some homemade dandelion honey. Not dandelion wine, not dandelion greens, but dandelion honey. And I'm going to tell you something. It was fantastic.
It sounds good.
I mean, I wish she was on right now so she could tell you how she made it. But she told me how she made it. And then when I went over there the other day, she said, okay, so now you need to taste it. And I'm like, oh, my God. Because my dad, when you made biscuits, you always had, like, honey that's from where you live, and butter, and it was such a taste of home. I loved it.
Yeah. So how does she make the dandelion honey? This isn't just like honey made from bees that feast on a lot of dandelions, but actually a process, right?
Yes, it is a process, and I think what she did was, oh my gosh, I wish I wouldn't have called, so she should have called to tell you how she's making it, because it was so, she boiled and put, you know, like, white sugar, but some other kind of sweetness, and just boiled it. It was delicious.
And what color was it? Sorry.
Oh.
It was actually kind of a yellow color, and so when she gave me the bun, she buttered it. It was warm, and then she put the honey on it, and it turned golden.
Oh, my gosh. Julie, you're talking about what we've been talking about throughout Ham Radio, right? That didn't cost a lot of money to make that thing.
But
it took a lot of time.
Well, because that's the way our family does things, is we just want to not buy stuff. You know, we just want to make stuff. So,
Julie, you heard us talking about the community recipe. Is that something you might try? I feel like you make things like this sometimes.
Well, I'm going to tell you something about community. You're going to hate me for this.
Uh-oh.
They're generally boring. I'm sorry.
What's generally boring? Oh, community
boring.
Cookbooks. Oh, okay.
Oh, community cookbooks.
We're going to change your mind on that. But I mean, what about we put the recipe out now. Will you try that? The brand?
Absolutely, I'll try that. Okay. I will absolutely try that.
Okay.
Because that's what my family does, is we get a recipe in our head, and then we have to go to each other's house and say, you got to taste this. You got to see this. I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff I could have talked about. I took notes all the entire show, so I'm not going to go there.
That's so great. Oh my God. Love it. I know it's like a project, though, right? And yeah. Over the years, you make the same thing, and you just make it again and again. About those community cookbooks, though, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's like five kinds of peanut butter bars you have to sift through to get to the gems, but you just kind of like...
Well, you know what? Let me just say this. My mother, she was not community cookbook, but she had these recipes from her mother and her grandmother. And then, so I'm 73, so mother was like in her 50s. She's like, oh my gosh, a microwave. I could do this thing. I could do that thing. I could do these things. And basically, really and truly, she should have just cooked her stuff.
The microwave ruined it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because microwaves were such a big, huge deal.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, I remember really when we had our first one, too.
I do, too.
I know. Don't you? Don't you remember when you first had your first microwave?
Yeah.
And my husband, who I divorced early, said, we don't need one of those.
Is that why you divorced? I'm sorry.
I did. And that's all. Let's last give somebody straw. Else.
I remember there was a cookbook with the microwave. And
there was a cookbook.
I made eggs. Like, I thought that would be great. And they just had a microwave taste.
I know. Yeah. Microwave is good for warming coffee. And that's all. Gotta go now.
Okay.
Right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
It's Ham Radio. Now, we've got a couple of responses here, Amy. When you were talking about the freshwater sushi, we heard from our friend Iris. She said she's wondered the same thing about the freshwater sushi, and I've gone down the rabbit hole. I'm pretty sure that the answer is parasites, unfortunately. Katie also chimes in, freshwater sushi equals parasites, 3 exclamation points. Have fun with the tapeworms.
Oh my okay, gosh. Maybe I don't do that.
I hope, John, did you hear that? I hope.
Yeah, John, if you're listening, we have some wiser souls here. That's not.
Yeah,
I remember. Just like, I'm sorry to go back to the microwave.
Yeah,
just when we got it, it was like we all kneeled around it, watching some like a boil a cup of water, like it was some sort of like alien thing, and the light emanating. It was just like, yeah.
We'd love to hear from you. We've got a little more time to take your phone call, 218-326-1234. Let's remind folks again about this bran flatbread. Is that what you call it?
Crisp bread.
Crisp bread.
It's like a cracker.
And it's courtesy of Amy's cookbook company. You can find it at kexe.org. Look for the Ham Radio page. And then if you're listening on a podcast, it'll be in the show notes. So we hope that you try it and that you give us some feedback, even if it didn't quite work for you. We want to know.
Yeah. And I mean, to clarify, it's Bruce Engebretson's recipe that comes from his aunt Sarah and through his family, and he's perfected it. It will work for you. I think so.
Amy, I've heard you talk about your mom and cooking with your mom. Did you have a grandma that you also like stood with and cooked with?
Yeah. My grandma Dion, who was my mom's mom. Yes, definitely. My grandma taught me how to make bread.
Mm.
You know, we would, she was very evocative the way she described things.
Oh, like how? Racy?
Yeah, you know, yeah, kind of actually. I don't know if I can repeat some of the things, but, you know, she would just like teach me like how the bread should squeak when the gluten was developed. Like there was like, it was squeaking.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There we go.
Definitely.
You can text us as well to 218-326-1234. We've been talking about thrift.
Yeah.
How much things cost, the time it takes. We've got another call coming in. Hi, you're on Ham Radio.
Hey, Heidi, it's Betsy.
Hey, Betsy. This is Julie's sister, Betsy.
Hi, Betsy.
Yes. Hey, Amy. Watched your show, loved it. But just to know, just to counteract, which I always do, what my sister said.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
She did, about Robin. So Robin, her granddaughter, my niece, brilliant, and it was a long process. She did, about the honey. Ooh. And she did use, actually, regular sugar. Because she called me, she goes, do you have 4 cups of sugar? I'm like, yes, I do. So she came over, got four cups of sugar.
4 cups, not 1 cup. Four cups.
And she had to, she boiled it, and she reduced it. And it took a long time, but it truly was delicious with the dandelion. So she made dandelion honey. She's 13. It was amazing. It was so delicious, and she jarred it up, and that's all I have to say, just to counteract my sister. But it took a really long time. It did take a long time, and she was like a little anxious, but her mom kept saying, you gotta let it reduce, and she did, and it turned out fabulous. And it looked like honey, and it
tasted
like honey. It was delicious.
It took time, didn't it?
It did. It took a lot of time.
Well, plus the time,
and you know where she got that recipe?
Where?
She got that recipe? TikTok.
Hey,
there you go.
Betsy, yeah. Between the sisters, do you guys have specialties that you make? Do you have a specialty that they ask you to bring, and Julie has one, to a party?
I made a tortellini salad, and this weekend, a cold tortellini. I make... I'll make calico beans, and that kind of takes a long time too. But it's always delicious. Yeah, that's usually what I bring to our deals.
Thanks, Betsy.
Great show, you guys.
Thank you, Betsy.
It's Ham Radio. We want to thank all the folks next week. Do you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to be talking about next week?
No, let's keep it a secret.
Okay, good. But we want people to cook with us. This is a community of people, and we're going to take the time. Do you think I could do it? I'm going to try it, okay?
Oh, yeah. And, if people have like a different, I don't know, cracker, bread, anything you want to make that you think, is your thing, we want to hear about that too. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. We want to thank all the folks that we talked to today, Bruce Ingebrigtsen, Ted Lee, Lucas Squadroni, and all of our callers like John and Betsy and Julie. And then we had folks texting in like Sarah and Katie and Iris. I got all caps right now. We will. That means they'll try the recipe that's from Julie Crab.
Oh, that's great. So, and we were schooled, on the parasites and the fish.
Yes. See? We're learning.
I just don't want to believe it. I know. I mean,
we just got another text in from Noah in Brit. He says, fun fact, dandelions were brought to the Americas in the 17th century by European settlers as a food crop.
Seriously?
People know stuff, I'm telling you.
Boy, that was a rookie gardening mistake to let the to let the dandelions go, like the mint or something.
Yeah.
But the greens are good.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to get out and gather those. Have you ever had those?
No. Uh-uh.
They're really bitter, but, with enough bacon, it's very palatable.
Okay. I'll just have the bacon if that's okay by you. Hey, thanks, Amy. It's another edition of Ham Radio. And check us out. We've got lots of photos from all the stuff we've been talking about. Go to kaxe.org and spread the word. Share the podcast, available at the normal places where you get your podcasts. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, Heidi.
Ham Radio is produced at the KBXE Studios in Bemidji and made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of Minnesota. Hosts and creators Amy Thielen, produced by Heidi Holton. You Know How I Like It is a licensed original song from Jeremy Messersmith. Original Ham Radio artwork by T.L. Saleen and graphic design by Christopher Larson. Thanks to KAXE's Chelsea Perkins and photographer Lori Shaw. Find more Ham Radio at KAXE.org and on your favorite podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and more. Sign up for the Ham Radio newsletter at KAXE.org.
If I'm honest, it's just okay.